It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
So, as I mentioned to you in passing, not on the air, me and Trish and Trish's youngest sister, whose birthday takes place right after mine, are doing another thing where we rent a house somewhere and hang out for a week. And it looks pretty fun. And this year we are staying in a pretty big vacation rental house on like 3 acres of land out in the woods right near Eau Claire, Wisconsin.
Oh.
And I'm kind of excited for it because Eau Claire, Wisconsin always seems like a kind of a cool town, and they've got some stuff. I've never been there, but I know, like, I've looked up online what they have, and I just also have known quite a few people who are either from there or lived there over the years, and they all seem pretty cool, so it just seems like a neat town. But what cracks me up the most is anytime I see it or hear about Eau Claire, Wisconsin, the first thing that pops into my head is Strong Bad. Because one of the Strong Bad emails came from Eau Claire, Wisconsin, and it had their name, and it said Eau Claire, Wisconsin, which he read, and he read the name, and then he said, "Ew, Claire, why?" Because that's what it looks like if you don't, like, know. And so that's just stuck in there forever. Like, oh, where are you going on vacation? We're going to, Eau Claire, Wisconsin. I'm really excited. So
when people see this, it's only going to be like, it's going to be less than 3 weeks to your birthday.
Yeah. I don't hate my birthday. Like with the holidays or whatever. I don't give a shit though. I mean, it's the one thing where Trish and I actually do gifts, and that is fun, especially because in recent years she's actually gotten good at getting the gifts, which I'm still kind of mad about because I have not gotten better at getting her gifts. And it's fun to have some gifts to open up. There'll be cake, I'm sure. That's fun, but I don't care. I have reached the point where I'm like, yeah. It is based on a semi-arbitrary cycle, loosely based off the rotation of the sun. I have hit another one of those in my lifespan, which could end at any moment or continue on. I mean, it's going to be one of those.
Yeah, one of those, for sure.
Yeah. Or I mean, I guess Zombie Tony could be a thing.
Zom-Tony. That'll be fun.
I mean, by this point it will be much further, but when we're recording this, which is mid-December, I have finally started Baldur's Gate 3, the video game.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
It's fun.
It's
fun. A little stressful for me. I'm noticing this, and I don't know if this is me more finely honing my preferences or if this is a change in me as I get older or what. It's too open a little bit. Like, I have no sense of if I do this thing or say this thing, how is this potentially going to drastically affect the story? Oh. Or if I go and fight these people, I have no idea if I'm going to lose, like if it's too powerful or whatever. And that's, there's a fun in that, but it stresses me a little bit. And I had at least one where I made some decisions and then was like, I don't like these decisions. I'm going to go back to an earlier save. And still stuff that I'm not sure, but it's fun. And I think the answer is Yeah, and you play it multiple times and say like, well, that decision went poorly, right? But I don't yet know how long playing it once is.
Yeah, right.
And I know I get sick of things eventually, especially if we go through the whole story or whatever. But there is a lot going on, and I have yet to find people who have played it through once who haven't played it through more than once. So we will see. But I'm having fun so far. The UI is strange for me, which is weird. Actually, a lot of the UI is very familiar to me because I played the Divinity Original Sin games, and all the stuff that's not Dungeons and Dragons is the same as it was in Divinity Original Sin. So a lot of the functions, including my personal favorite, which is if you hold down a button, it gives you a search radius and just tells you everything that's there. I find that very handy when you're trying to find all the boxes and whatever. So I like that. And a fair bit of the menus are familiar, but it's just a little weird. I remember the first day I was playing, I managed to, and also because you can turn this off, but it is very violent and very sexually explicit. And consequently, all the characters have underwear that is like an equipable piece of clothing that
Yeah.
you can unequip. That serves no game purpose, as far as I can tell. There are no stat boosts or penalties for wearing or not wearing it. And due to my confusion with the interface, I found out that maybe during a fight, the two characters I had at the time, I had accidentally switched their underwears. Like, they hadn't taken off the rest of their clothes or anything, but for clicking on things and the pictures are small, and I don't know what happened. I get very confused about who's carrying what and if it matters or whatever, and who I'm on. But the point is, I switched around their underwear, and I didn't notice until I went to change some equipment later, and I'm like, that's not what they look like during character creation. That's something else. And then I checked a little closer, and it said whose underwear. Like, it, I guess it has its name sewn into the back or whatever. So that was weird. I am playing a bard, because I thought that was good for a lot of the talking and stuff like that. It is working pretty good so far. I've now got enough characters that not all can come with me, and I'm having a hard time deciding who I like. They all have legit reasons
Yeah,
why
really
it would
good.
be very useful for them to come.
Yeah.
And I'm already have starting to have opinions about different, like, I like them, I don't like them. They clearly like me. They don't like me. From what little I know, I might not be falling into most commonly accepted opinions on that kind of stuff. I don't know. There's a name that's been tossed around the internet a lot to lead me to imply that people really like this particular character, and so far I really don't like this particular character. So we'll have to see. But I definitely don't have everybody yet. I'm up to five people, including myself. But I'm pretty confident I know where another one is on the map I'm on. But yeah, it's fun, and it's very Dungeons and Dragons. Very much. I actually had a thing happen where I rolled and got a natural one and used the inspiration to reroll, which is the way that it works in this. That's not actually how it works on tabletop, but and got another natural one. Like, in some cases, I'm like, I push through. I'm like, no, the universe is telling me I fucked this up. There's no recovery. This is clearly something I have done wrong. So I would let it stand at that point. So that's kind of fun. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast that exists in 2025, because all the rest of them were on TikTok. And apparently that's going well. I've been thinking about doing TikTok, and I've been waiting because by the time I was thinking about it, the first of the various legislations that threatened to make it go away when it happened. And so I'm like, let's wait. Because if it becomes illegal, I don't. Or if it becomes illegal and then adjusts itself to become legal again, maybe people won't like it as well or whatever. And so who knows? So I haven't really fucked with that yet. You hear about this blue sky thing?
Yeah, at least one person, my acquaintances, has sent me an email saying, hey, I'm moving over to Blue Sky. Maybe you want to do that too. I mean, I don't really use X that much in the first place, so I haven't done that. But I don't think
X
I will.
X and
but.
Facebook I only use to announce this podcast, and every time I'm like, I hate this place. Mm-hmm. But there is listener engagement on there, so at this point I don't quite feel comfortable moving away from that. But there have been, ever since Elon bought Twitter and did terrible things to it, there have been attempts to sort of migrate things to a new one. There was one called Mastodon. That, I mean, I think it's still out there. That
it's still there.
A couple other ones. It hasn't really caught on, from what I can tell. But this one is curious because a lot of different people I watch on YouTube are moving over to it. And not only just moving over to it, but leaving Twitter/X. Uh-huh. And I had not heard of this until I started seeing this phenomenon, and so I was looking it up. And Blue Sky is basically Twitter, except it is decentralized in terms of the way it is built, which means technically nobody will ever be able to own it, I believe, or at least own it outright. So it will potentially prevent not only what happened with Twitter, but what has happened with a ton of other social media platforms. I don't know. If any listeners have gone to Blue Sky, let us know about it. The problem being is, even if Twitter weren't the hellscape it is, I don't think William or I are that interested anyway. So having an alternative, I'm like, I'm glad there is one. I don't know that I care. But, you know, if enough people do it, maybe that's where I announce the podcast instead. Or maybe I additionally announce it there. I don't know. We'll see. So we have no emails. We are weeks out from when this actually airs. Let's talk about Death of a Unicorn.
Well, I did want to say that we did play Baldur's Gate 3, but Abby also started playing Dragon Age.
Dragon Age Veilguard. Yeah.
And she really likes it. And the similarities between the games is pretty interesting. It's not turn-based, but that's about the only difference. There's a lot of other, I mean, and the background story, of course, but a lot of other things are like, you know, with the companions and all the other stuff, it's like, wow, this seems like I'm just watching Baldur's Gate 3.
There is becoming a sort of format in a way.
Yeah. But she does like it so far, so I'm just going to throw that out there. Yeah. Anyone thinking about playing the game, we haven't run into any bugs or anything like that. It seems like a good Dragon Age game, so if you're interested in it, give it a try.
But it's quite different than the other ones, yes?
I mean,
I've heard it looks different, the way the mechanics work.
Yeah. All that's, sure. Yeah, it's different in those ways, yeah. But I mean, you still feel like you're in that world, and a lot of the interactions work kind of the same. I mean, nothing's ever going to live up to Origins when it comes to the rich and deep and ridiculously lore heavy interactions between you as the player and your companions, but also the companions talking to each other as they walk around. It's just, I mean, they all try to do that, but none of them do it as well as Origins did, as far as I'm concerned, but it's still pretty good. Still pretty good.
This is a weird poll, but my favorite NPC banter while you're traveling around so far is actually Mass Effect Andromeda. Because it was very little repeat, because it was actually scripted. There were essentially character arcs just within the conversations while we were driving around in the thing.
That's right, yeah. That was pretty interesting.
And I mean, there was some good banter in the earlier Mass Effect things too, but Andromeda really gave me the sense that, like, I'm becoming closer friends with these people, and these people are becoming closer friends
with each other. Yeah.
And like, it really gave me the sense of a relationship growing, rather than what I'm used to of, we have X conversations, I give you Y number of presents, now we're in love. Right. Which I understand why a video game does that, but the point is there's a little dissonance there.
Yeah, right.
Compared, it felt much more organic in Andromeda. I think Mass Effect Andromeda gets a bad rap. I really enjoyed that game. I played it all the way through. The bugs are largely fixed now. So the whole bug issue, which was insane to begin with, but that's pretty resolved. Some people have some issues with the mechanics in the story, but people, now that Mass Effect has been out for so long and was so popular, people seem to love to drill down into like a specific game and be like, oh, this wasn't as good. Fallout's a similar thing. Like, imagine my shock years later when I found out there's a lot of people who hate Fallout 4. And I'm like, why? And it's like, well, because it did all these things differently than this other one. Mechanically speaking, I'm like, yeah, but I mean, it's still Fallout. Like, Fallout. And they all have that feel to it and stuff. And that's the same
thing. Yeah. Yeah.
So some of you, if you're jonesing for some Mass Effect and don't want to wait around for the unnamed sequel that may happen someday, check out Andromeda. I liked it. Let's talk about Death of a Unicorn.
Okay, let's talk about this.
yesterday in our time, I saw this trailer for a movie coming up this spring called Death of a Unicorn. And I lost my goddamn mind. And I sent it to a bunch of people. And nobody said anything. Except William, who said, I can't tell from the way you sent this if you are excited or horrified about this movie. And I responded, I honestly am not sure either. I'm more on the excited part now.
Okay.
So it's an A24 film. I was initially interested. It is a stacked cast of the like 10 people in the trailer. There is only one of them I do not recognize. And they seem to also do a good job, but everybody else in it, we have, I mean, and Paul Rudd. I know I hate Paul Rudd, but if I never see Paul Rudd again, that's also fine. Up front are Jenna Ortega and Paul Rudd, but then we've got Taya Leone. We've got, is it Rob Delaney? Maybe. I don't know. Maybe not. I might be mixing it up with a different thing I'm watching. Will Poulter, Richard E. Grant, who's everywhere right now, and I'm here for it. I love it, Richard E. Grant, so much. And the premise appears to be that while visiting some rich people, Paul Rudd and Jenna Ortega are going through a forest and run over something and put it in the back of their trunk. And eventually it turns out it's not dead yet. And it turns out it's a fucking unicorn. And it suddenly becomes a comedy. And it's about, they find out the properties of the unicorn horn makes like a miracle drug, and they're all becoming really wealthy on this. But then, like, there's more unicorns, and they get mad, and it turns into very much a horror movie. Like this is definitely a rated R film where, like, the unicorns get all demonic and, like, attack. And, like, there also appears to be some sort of epic fantasy vibe, because meanwhile, Jenna Ortega's character seems to be doing some weird, joining with the universe to learn out what the point of, I don't know. The point is, it's like three different movies, and I'm kind of here for all of them.
Okay.
So, like, I think it's probably going to be good, but I know that if it's not going to be good, it's going to be amazingly bad. Like, I do not feel like this movie can be boring, and I am definitely going to see it. Maybe in the theater, depending on how things play out. It's a ways off, but I am excited for this movie because I think it's either going to be really awesome or awesomely not good.
I mean, A24 films are kind of like that in general, aren't they? I mean, it's always worth taking a look. It's
sometimes they're a little boring too, but like...
Oh, yeah, I guess.
Like Lamb. Lamb didn't look like a good movie. It also didn't look like a bad enough movie for me to want to watch it. That sometimes they just do weird for weird's sake, but like this one just seems really layered Like there's like there were like four or five times in the trailer that I'm like, but how does this work with what you just did in that scene? Like it just was like it's several kinds of movies. So I don't know. But and yeah, it's hell of a cast, so. So yeah. We got that. I'm just filling time because we don't got other stuff. Shall we talk about the other movies I've watched? Because there's a few.
Good idea. I don't really have anything else but video games to talk about.
Let's do a couple of classics here. So there is a movie from 1984, 1985 called Phenomena. Not to be confused with Phenomenon, that weird John Travolta movie. Phenomena. It is also known in certain countries as Creepers. And I've always known it as a movie in which a very young Jennifer Connelly in one of her first roles plays a girl who has a psychic connection with insects. And also that Dario Argento made it. This was not enough for me to want to see it. So I've known about this movie for many years, and I have not seen it. I recently learned that, although it is very different in a lot of ways, the movie was the inspiration for the Japanese video game horror series Clock Tower, which I had not played, but I'm also familiar with, and I recently saw a deep dive like into the story and all that. And like the main character is really supposed to be based on Jennifer Connelly's character from the movie and all this. And I was like, you know what? It is in certain circles like a classic, and Jennifer Connelly's great. And you know, let's check it out. We'll check it out. One night I didn't have anything going on. Check it out. So check it out. Wow. It is so much more than a movie in which Jennifer Connelly controls insects.
Oh, that sounded like enough.
No, I know. It's way too much. It's like, okay. First and foremost, it's set in Switzerland at a prestigious all-girls school in Switzerland. Jennifer Connelly is coming to this school. She is the daughter of who we eventually find out is like a famous leading man actor, like all the other girls like lust after her dad. And she is being sent to this school. Nobody likes her for some reasons that make sense and some reasons that don't. Also, there's a murderer around. That's what the plot actually is there's a murder. It's a slasher giallo kind of movie. Somebody is killing off and we don't know who. We always see it from the wrong perspective, but like the opening is some tourist girl going into a house looking for help, and we see somebody breaking out of their chains, although we only see like their hands or whatever, and they murder her and whatever. And it's very much a crime thrill in that way, but it also involves Jennifer Connelly being able to, all insects love her. That's how we originally know about this, is all the insects don't ever harm her. She loves insects. They'll just like hang out on you and whatever. But we also have within this story Donald Pleasance with and this sounds like it's an inconsequential detail, but it is so not, with a Scottish accent that I've never heard Donald Pleasance do before. And I'm not gonna say it's a bad Scottish accent, it's not. There's just no reason for it to be. Donald Pleasance's voice sounds the same in every movie. He has a very good voice. For some reason in this movie, he's Scottish. Like, it doesn't come into play or anything. He's just, I mean, we're in Switzerland, so he's not like, but he's Scottish. He is a wheelchair-bound entomologist with a helper chimpanzee.
I mean, I want to say you're just making that part up, but
I also the chimpanzee will play a large role in this film.
Oh man, I mean, if this was a pitch, I'd say, now let me stop you there, because
at one point in this movie, again, apropos of nothing, the chimpanzee finds a fucking straight razor in a trash can. Again, apropos of nothing. Like, we don't know how this, we never learn how this straight razor got here, and heads off on a razor-based rampage, you assume, and for reasons that I will not go into, you're rooting for her. She's the good guy here because she's the nicest, most devoted monkey ever, and at a certain point she's given a raising.
She's given a razor
by the universe, not by any character.
Okay,
so Scottish Donald Pleasance is an entomologist, which, as we all know, is one who studies insects. Coincidence? Absolutely.
Oh, okay.
Oh, don't get me wrong. It will intertwine greatly.
No, sure.
But it's
yeah.
Just a coincidence.
Okay.
Because Jennifer Connelly, the character who loves insects, sleepwalks. This will have tremendous repercussions. She sleepwalks at one point and murders happen. Sometimes she sleepwalks and murders happen. So, and they actually happen. Sometimes she sleep, like, there's a lot of dream sequences and sleepwalking, and it is very unclear which are real and which aren't, at least often for a while until a body shows up or whatever. It's how much is she actually sleepwalking? How much is she dreaming about walking? And for absolutely no reason, all the school officials think because she sleepwalks that she's absolutely stark raving insane. Yeah, maybe this is a bad time to say every line of dialogue doesn't seem to have paid attention to the line of dialogue before. Anyway, during one of these sleepwalks, she is out in the woods alone and cold in her pajamas when she is found by a chimpanzee. Same chimpanzee.
Again, there's a lot of chimpanzees in the story.
Not accompanied by Scottish Donald Pleasance in a wheelchair. The chimpanzee nurse was just out for an evening stroll in the woods. And is like, hey, what's up? And Jennifer Connelly's like, oh, it's a chimp. This is great. And she stands up and takes the chimp's hand and is led to Donald Pleasance so that they can start a friendship as the only person who likes her.
Oh, because he's in it.
Because everybody else is meter. She gets bullied hard, real fast at the school. Especially once they figure out she's into insects, and like eventually they find a note she's writing to her dad that says, like, I think I can control insects now, and they think this is hilarious, and they bully her nonsensically until she summons more flies than exist in Switzerland, all in a big cloud of very poorly done visual effect, and freaks the fuck out of everyone and then passes out. This is about the point at which they want to institutionalize her. We have a whole subplot of her constantly on the phone to her father's lawyer and agent because her father is not reachable. About this is the one time where the otherwise incredibly nice Jennifer Connelly character turns into a spoiled brat where she's like, Morris, you have to get me out of here. Just send some money. And like, it's a whole deal. But anyway, Scott, I'm losing track of my details because it's just The order I'm giving them to you is not necessarily the order they are in the film, but it wouldn't help. Wheelchair bound Scottish Donald Pleasance is an entomologist who specializes in the apparently 8 different varieties of insect that eat dead human bodies and do so in a very specific and timed order, such that based on what larvae are in a corpse, you can determine the time of death to shockingly accurate results. And Scottish wheelchair-bound Donald Pleasance has leveraged this into multiple times in which he has helped the police. The police in this movie, represented by one detective, played by Patrick Bacow, who has remarkably few moments in the movie and who I'm pretty sure all of his lines were overdubbed with someone else's voice because I know what his voice sounds like. Donald Pleasance also lost a girl to this murderer a while back. At least that's what we think. All these girls are missing. We don't ever know if they're really, but they definitely are. And so he very much immediately is like, Jennifer Connelly is very similar to this girl. In fact, I have an old coat of hers that you should wear. It'll fit you, which they all claim it does. It's the 80s. This coat is enormous. She looks like she's the stand-in for David Byrne on the Stop Making Sense tour. It's a huge coat, but apparently that's what it's supposed to look like.
Oh.
So he determines this, and you'd think, like, oh, because this would be an obsessive thing, like he sees this other girl. No. This is just a real quick shorthand, so now they're best friends. He also very quickly learns that insects don't bother her, and in fact, she makes insects horny, apparently.
Oh.
Like there's this insect... And she, like, he has it out or whatever. And he's like, watch it, it'll sting you. And she's like, no, they never do. And she's like, playing with it. And he's like, oh, that's interesting. She's like, what? He's like, that noise that he's making? Smell him. He has her smell the bug. And she's like, it smells kind of sweet. He's like, yeah, that's a pheromone thing he's releasing or whatever. This is what he does when he's ready to mate. So you apparently excite him, and he's releasing this scent to try and excite you. End of scene.
No, come on.
And it comes up other times. Eventually, they well, okay, sorry.
That's weird.
Eventually, Scottish wheelchair ridden chimpanzee nursed entomologist Donald Pleasance decides that Jennifer Connelly has a psychic link with insects,
but it specifically arouses them.
We don't spend as much time on that, but it is sort of there. But the point is, he determines based on just the information I've given you so far, she must have a psychic connection, a telepathic connection with bugs. She didn't even believe it. He had to convince her of it. Based on very, very little information, for the record. Okay. But okay. Shockingly, this is accurate. And they eventually determine they're going to solve the murders because nobody else will, with a particular fly who, again, just loves her, that apparently can smell dead bodies from huge ways away. So she's essentially going to use it to douse for dead bodies. And it, again, works. And eventually we solve the mystery and everything like that, and it happens with the help of the monkey, which I know is an ape, but it just happened with it. Anyway, my point was not to tell this entire movie, and I am not telling this entire movie. My point is, there's so much in this movie, and none of it makes sense on its own, and none of it makes sense in relation to the other things in this movie. It's great. 10 out of 10, would recommend. if you want a bad movie. Like, it's amazing. And Jennifer Connelly, really commendable. She was like 15. Does a 15. Tremendous performance with the insanity she is given. All of her lines don't seem to relate to the line she said just before, but all of her lines are done very well. So check that out if you're like me and like that kind of weird ass things. And like I said, that's a very old one. Another old one, and this isn't as old as I thought. This is apparently from like 2010. In my head, I've known about this movie since the 90s and just never got around to it. It is a Christmas movie that is also a horror movie. It's called Die Hard. No, it's called Rare Exports.
Rare Exports. Never heard of it.
Yes. It is a Finnish film. And I remember back in the day when you couldn't just get everything, it was like an underground thing where everybody's like, oh, you ever see this? But again, I remember this being earlier, but apparently it's from 2010. It's a Finnish film. It is subtitled almost entirely, I think in German. Or I guess it would be in Finnish. What am I saying? It's in Finnish. Some of it's in German. Whatever. There's a company, there's a mining company that mines a mountain on the Finnish-Russian border because the eccentric billionaire who owns the company or whatever thinks it's the tomb of Santa Claus and he wants to get Santa Claus. And then our story mostly deals with, well, we've got one young boy who's our main character, but his family and locals who are largely very poor subsistence reindeer hunters, basically. And things happen and they've sort of accidentally kidnapped Santa Claus, except Santa Claus is feral.
Oh, I hate when that happens. When the Santa goes feral, that's awful.
And then I feel like that's as much as I can say about it. Here's the thing. I started off not enjoying it as well because I didn't get the tone. And it's harder to do with a film in a language you don't know with subtitles. This movie is bonkers. And you should go into it realizing it's bonkers. If you do that, it's a hell of a film. It is a ridiculous sort of faux epic action movie, but it all involves these dumbass, essentially Finnish hillbillies and this one kid with an overactive imagination and who finds a book about how Santa's actually pretty fucking evil and shit. Finnbillies. And he's about punishing kids. And also there's some, this might not be Santa that they found, but I don't want to, it's a hell of a time. I would recommend it. It's fun, but it's goofy as shit, and it's a very sort of silly, crazy-ass horror movie. There's a fair bit of gore in it. There's some explosions. It's like, if it was a little bit more serious, I might almost call it folk horror, but it's definitely, like, not. It's a goofy film, and I won't tell you why it's called Rare Exports, because you don't find out the answer to that until like the last moments of the film, and it's pretty good. So I checked that out. It's a fun time.
Okay. All right. One more film for the Finnbilly genre.
Yes, yes.
They need to make more Finnbilly films.
Finnbilly?
Yeah, hillbilly Finnish people.
Oh, Finnbilly. I was hearing T-H-I-N Billy.
No. Finnbilly.
I was like, I didn't say they were skinny. Don't
know more, but Finnbilly films.
All right. Okay, this is a lot. We're gonna do the first one. Last night we watched Freaky, which was a film I did not believe I was interested in, but recently I had seen some things talking about how it's better than you think it is. So I watched it.
Freaky? It's called Freaky?
Yes.
I don't think I know that one either.
It kind of came and went. It's by the guy who did the Happy Death Day to You movies, which went a little bit better. But it is basically a horror movie spoof, a horror comedy, if you will, based on the concept of Freaky Friday. Oh. But the people who switch bodies in this one are a shy, sort of stereotypical vapid high school girl in her way. Like, she's got more going on, but she's got a lot of the traditional "I'm a blonde high school girl" from, like, The Language of Cinema vibe. Switches bodies with a perennial serial killer, sort of Jason Voorhees stand-in, played by Vince Vaughn. And most of the comedy derives from the fact that for most of the movie, Vince Vaughn is essentially playing a teenage girl. And then the actress who was the teenage girl is playing a secret serial killer. And so that's where the thing lies. And Trish and I think felt very similar about it. She had a very long explanation of why she felt the way she did. I feel like I can sum it up better. I liked one third of the movies this was. I've heard of a story or a film or whatever giving one tonal whiplash.
Oh.
This gave me tonal, like, full anal prolapse. Like, this movie made me physically uncomfortable sometimes with how much it suddenly switched to a completely different vibe of movie. Like, yeah. In all sorts of direct, but just to the point where, like, sometimes I would grab, like, I had a physical reaction of just how suddenly we swung into a different gear. So let me put it this way. It is a shockingly dark and bleak and really gory horror film.
Oh.
Sort of slasher horror film. That is pretty mediocre. It's not terrible, but it's not great. It is a sort of family drama that's pretty terrible. And it's also sort of teen comedy romp that was pretty good. So the parts of the movie that were that, mostly the funny parts, not bad. It does a little bit have it's having a very cake and eat it too thing, in that the high school scenario and everything is a completely incongruous mix of a modern Gen Z woke high school vibe and the over the top high school tropes from the 80s. And they don't, like, work together because it's a very different, those two places hold a very different socio-political landscape. And so, like, if the kind of bullying that goes on in this movie was happening, these characters who are very modern and very modern sensibilities would have people would be getting reported to administrators, people would be losing their jobs, people would be getting suspended, but those sections are 80s bullying, and that just happens. Even to the degree that we have, like, a naturally aggressive and sort of verbally abusive and physically threatening teachers in a way that you would see in an 80s movie, and it was supposed to be sort of funny, and in this, it's there, and it just feels so wildly out of place. I mean, the family drama part involves, like, the dad died a year ago and mom is clearly drinking to cope. And mom is shown, because it has very modern sensibilities, as being the problem. We are less sympathetic for mom and more about our main character needs to set boundaries because she is enabling. We are doing that. And yet this mother comes up throughout the story as the comedic line of you would have of a mother in a horror movie situation who doesn't know what's going on. But every time she's on screen, I can just feel nothing but a chasm of sadness for her life. So the jokes involving her don't land real well for me.
Oh.
That kind of thing. So it's just, yeah, it's like three different movies, one of which is not very good, one of which is terrible, and one of which is pretty good. So, and again, your enjoyment of Vince Vaughn will definitely impact the experience. All right, now we got the main event. And I'm a little afraid to talk about this.
Why?
For one reason only. I'm afraid that when I'm going to say this, you will not have heard of this movie. Because in my world, this movie's a big deal.
Oh.
And has been making a big deal. And yet when I have talked to people about it, everyone I have talked to has been like, what movie is that? And when I explained, they have not heard of this movie.
Okay.
So I'm concerned because more people need to know about this movie.
Oh.
I did never intend to see this movie, largely because I was told it was a body horror film, and in general, that is not my thing.
Yeah.
Trish, for, I think, much more feminist reasons, wanted to see this movie and knew less about it than I did. And so we watched it, and we watched The Substance.
No, I don't know.
This is a shame. This is a real shame. I should say, you're not going to want to watch this movie. Abby might want to watch this movie. You're not going to want to watch this movie. I'm not saying you can't. I'm just saying nothing about it would appeal to you in particular, and there's a lot of things that wouldn't appeal specifically. It is a very recent horror movie starring Demi Moore, also featuring Margaret Qualley, I think, who's not an actress I'm familiar with, but apparently she's been around, and Dennis Quaid. It's a movie to not know too much going in, but I have to sort of give an underlying premise. So Demi Moore plays an aging actress. The movie is incredibly deliberate with all of its filmmaking choices and is not a subtle film. So we very much establish she is an aging actress. Her heyday is long gone. She now does exercise videos or whatever. And she knows she's on the verge of getting fired from that because she's just too old and they want new hotness. In the sense of desperation, she is put in touch with an anonymous company that creates The Substance. And The Substance causes your body to create another person from your DNA. So it is you, but better. A younger, more able, more attractive version of you. It creates two bodies. And then through a complex process, one body stays in a comatose state and the other body lives their life for 7 days. And then you switch and you do this back and forth. But they are all you. And ostensibly, it is the same consciousness that goes from one to the other.
Okay.
She does this, hijinks ensue. The movie is a not at all subtle metaphor for modern beauty standards, especially for women, and the trauma of being someone whose entire career and entire identity is based, whether knowingly or not, around being young and attractive, but then you age and you cannot stay that way.
Uh-huh.
And it obviously speaks to cosmetic surgery and things like that. It is, as I said, from a film craft perspective, it's kind of amazing. And it's very deliberately shot. There is a lot of body horror in it. Near the end, it gets laughably gory. Like, Like, it really goes off the rails with how fucked up and gory and nasty everything is. Very much on purpose. Early on in the movie, there is a lot of nudity in this movie, almost entirely by the two female leads, and it is very, very intentionally, very heavily male gazing. A lot of it is one or both of these women, one or each of these women standing in a bathroom in front of a mirror. So you get a tremendously close and detailed and comprehensive look of both Demi Moore and Margaret Qualley's naked bodies. And near to, so like there's a compare and contrast because that's sort of the point. And it very much is all thrown on its head later in the movie. Like it's not sexy. It's uncomfortable. It's also fascinating because Demi Moore went for it. Like Demi Moore is about the age of this character, and it's a very revealing part, and she is for the most part not, like, insofar as the styling can be controlled, she is not made to look very attractive in this movie. So she must really have believed in this project. Because essentially Demi Moore is an actress in this kind of situation. And so it really puts her out there for this. I think it is a very well done movie. I think it is a quality movie. I recommend it. I liked it. Trish loved it. I do not think my opinion holds as much weight because a lot of the things it is dealing with, a lot of the social implications, a lot of the metaphors going on, are things I know, are things I understand, are things I'm aware of that I believe exist and that I think need to be talked about and that I think this movie talked about interestingly. They are not things I have experienced. I know about the pressure every woman in our society has put on for this kind of stuff. I don't experience it. I never have. So, to a degree, this can't resonate or doesn't resonate as strongly with me. Intellectually, I can appreciate it, but it didn't hit. But it, again, as a filmmaking thing, it's so, like, this is definitely the movie this filmmaker wanted to make. It's the same. Her name is Jane something. She made a movie called Revenge from, I think, 2017. That is a rape revenge film, and I did not see it, but I have heard it referenced a lot, and it kind of turns the whole thing on its head in a way that people thought was pretty impressive. Yeah, it's a hell of a movie. It's a hell of a ride. There's a lot of body horror in it. I got stuck a little bit with the usual thing. Like, we talk a lot about the details for how this science works, and it doesn't always hold up. I mean, obviously it doesn't hold up in terms of science.
Right.
There's a bit at the end that I'm like, just from conservation of matter, there couldn't be that much blood. But like the rules they put forth and what happens, I'm like, and that caught me up a couple of times. But there was a couple of scenes in this that really chilled me, and I think were some of the most affecting scenes I've ever seen in terms of the point those scenes were trying to get across. And it's a movie that has layers. It's a movie Trish and I have talked about a lot in different contexts since we saw it a few days ago. So it's a really impressive movie. But yeah, you got all those caveats. It's really gory. It has a tremendous, not titillating, but very, very intimate series of nudity throughout it. Dennis Quaid is a stand-in for basically every man in show business, and he plays the most disgusting man in some ways because of how it was shot and directed also. But his performance right now, I think Dennis Quaid might kind of little be a shithead in his old age, so maybe he was channeling a little bit. But yeah, so check that out if you dare. It's impressive. I don't know if I'll see it again. I might. I don't often see things again. I'm glad I saw it, and I'm really glad it exists. And I think the more people who see it, the better. So it's called The Substance. Came out this year. Check it out. And on that note, I don't even know what day it is anymore for when we're recording this, because we're doing it's the holidays, our schedule's all weird, but you know what day it is. It's 1 week from the last episode. So is this our first, this is our first 2025?
Correct. That's my understanding. The second, I want to say.
Looks about the same, I'm honest. But that's cool. Whatever. I got my chair. What else do I need?
What else do you
But for,
need?
again, for you, listen again next week. For us, it'll probably be 3 months before we're recording this. But I do want to say, do I? No, I don't. Never mind. I thought I was going to, but I'm not.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.